You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, board meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month starting at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
The more compassion we have towards animals, the more compassion we're going to have towards other people.
If you can value them all, you really value yourself as well.
So even if you don't care about animals, the things we do that hurt animals end up hurting ourselves.
It's almost kind of a dominion type issue where we feel we need to control everything.
Dominion means stewardship, to take care of.
What would a cow think about satisfying our habit? The challenge lies with looking at suffering from the perspective of the person or individual suffering.
Good morning and welcome to the April episode of Voices for the Animals. My name is Michelle Coppola, and along with Noah Bristol and Julianne Schwartz, we are very proud to bring you this monthly program where we give a voice to the issues affecting the other sentient, non-human creatures with whom we share this planet. We also wanted to say that we hope that everybody listening is doing well and staying healthy during this challenging time, and we are glad to be able, with the help of modern technology, to still be able to bring you this program. By the way, if you hear my dogs Pete and Roxy barking in the background, that is one of the perks of working from home and recording from home. At least it is for me. Before we get to our guest, we want to let you know about some upcoming local events in the animal welfare world. In-person activism has obviously had to take a back seat right now due to health concerns, but there are some events planned for later this spring and summer, provided that things stabilize. On Sunday, May 17th, there will be a virtual Free Chendra rally by the Free the Oregon Zoo Elephants. That's an organization that works tirelessly to pressure the Oregon Zoo to release its captive elephants to more humane sanctuaries to live out their lives. This virtual rally will take place on Facebook, and the organization will go live with videos, streaming, and Q&As with animal experts, including the founder of Elephant Aid International. It's open to everyone, and you just need to follow the Free the Oregon Zoo Elephants on Facebook to see it. Sunday, June 7th is National Animal Rights Day. And again, provided things are open back up, Shady Pines Vegan Food Court on Northeast 42nd in Portland will be hosting a celebration from 1 to 5 p.m. Again, that's Sunday, June 7th. They'll have inspirational speakers, live music, vegan pop-ups, nonprofits, free samples. Ooh, I'm going to that. Raffles and a whole lot more. Details on these events and others can be found at the Voices for the Animals Facebook page. Now to our guest. I'm very excited. Today we are so lucky to have on our show Scott Beckstead. He is the Oregon Rural Outreach Director for the Humane Society of the United States. Scott is so knowledgeable on so many issues of animal welfare, both in our region and worldwide. And so I wanted to have him on because there are so many top-of-mind issues happening right now that involve animals and animal welfare. I've known Scott for a while now through various animal welfare activities, and he does everything from lobbying the state legislature on animal welfare causes to rescuing abandoned litters of kittens on the side of the road. Thank you so much for being here today, Scott. Are you healthy and well?
Doing great, Michelle. It's a pleasure to be here with you, and an honor to talk to you about these issues that we both love.
So before we get into our topics, can you give us a brief rundown on how you became involved in animal welfare and ended up in your current position?
That's probably an entire half hour in and of itself. I'll try and give you the abbreviated version.
I was
born and raised on a small family farm in southern Idaho. I was surrounded by animals from birth. My parents like to tell the story that I knew how to ride a horse before I knew how to walk. And my animals were always my best and dearest friends. So I always had a real love for animals and a strong desire to protect them from cruelty. When I went to law school, I knew when I was in law school that I wanted to spend at least part of my career working for animals. So even though I went into private practice right out of law school, I immediately started getting involved in the field of animal law. Ended up teaching animal law in 1997 at the University of Oregon. That experience prompted me and three other attorneys to write and publish the first ever casebook on animal law. I have been teaching animal law, wildlife law, and policy and the Endangered Species Act at Willamette University College of Law in Salem since 2010. So I had a strong interest in the law as it pertains to animal welfare going way back, and it's been a big part of my professional development and growth. Back in the early 90s, I worked as one of the campaign leaders for Measure 18, which banned the use of dogs to hunt bears and cougars and the use of bait to hunt bears. And I've been involved at the legislative level to preserve Measure 18 ever since that time. And in my role with HSUS, I've worn a multitude of hats. We're coming up on the 12-year anniversary of my taking a position with the Humane Society. I was originally hired to help set up our Duchess Horse Sanctuary here in North Douglas County. And then I moved over into the role of Oregon State Director, where I worked for many years. And of course, I spent a lot of time in Salem working to pass laws to protect animals as well as to defeat efforts to harm animals by the legislature. And then most recently, starting in 2016, I've been working as the Rural Outreach Director for the Humane Society, where I work essentially on farm policy to protect the animals that are raised for food from cruelty and abuse. And then, of course, throughout my career and my entire life, I have felt a special affinity for horses. And so I have worked on horse protection issues, especially our effort to stop the cruelty of the horse slaughter industry throughout my time with HSUS. And that's something that I'm still very passionate about, and I'm glad to be able to continue working on that. So like I said, I've worn a multitude of hats, and I've worked with so many amazing people and advocates. So I consider myself very fortunate to be doing the work that I really love to do and that I feel like I was built to do.
Since it's on everybody's mind right now, I guess we should first start with the coronavirus, especially because its origins involve humans' treatments of animals. It's a zoonotic disease, which means it can be transmitted between non-human animals and people. There have been a lot of conflicting reports about the origins of this latest strain of coronavirus, but the consensus is, of course, that it originated in China's wet markets. Those are notorious for live slaughter to order of both domestic animals and wildlife of all kinds. You know, people see the pictures and condemn the Chinese for these markets. But Scott, really, the fact is that here in the U.S. and in other countries all over the world, animals are being factory farmed and slaughtered in terrible conditions as well. Is there really any difference other than the variety of animals being slaughtered?
You really hit the nail on the head, and I'm glad that you framed it in terms of what is happening here in the United States, because, of course, most Americans see the photographs and the images from these markets and are absolutely horrified with just the abject suffering going on in those wet markets. And it's absolutely terrible. And people are right to be demanding that those wet markets be shut down, and that the Chinese government, as well as the governments of the other countries where those markets flourish, to really put an end to it. But having said that, it's important for people to remember that we raise over 9 billion animals in the United States for food every year. And the vast majority of those animals are raised on factory farms where the conditions are absolutely inhumane. Conditions like animals being so tightly confined that they can barely even move, and that's how they spend their entire lives. Animals being pumped full of drugs and antibiotics to both promote their weight gain as well as to prevent the outbreak of infectious diseases that could wipe them all out. And then, of course, all of those substances are passed on to human consumers. Factory farming in the United States is basically the dominant way of doing business. If you are an animal producer, chances are you raise your animals in these fundamentally inhumane factory farms. Thankfully, there are a growing number of family farmers that are doing animal agriculture correctly. They're raising their animals out on grass with lots of room to move around. And so, you know, I always tell my friends and loved ones who eat meat that, you know, if you choose to eat meat, if you choose to eat dairy and eggs, you can make a choice. You can spend your dollars in such a way that you are making the choice for a more humane and responsible way of producing these animals. But to me, it's inconsistent on the one hand to condemn the Chinese for the way they treat the animals that they're producing food with, and yet go to the grocery store or to McDonald's or whatever and order factory farmed meat, dairy, and eggs from animals that were just as miserable, perhaps even more so, because their suffering lasted their entire lifetime. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, it's basically two sides of the same coin. And what I like to say is that the Chinese are starting the pandemics with their wet markets, and the Americans are making it so we can't be treated for those diseases because of our factory farms. We use so many antibiotics and the conditions are so unhealthy that it creates a situation where we are literally eating food that is making us sick and that is keeping us from getting well when we do get sick.
You know, that is such an important issue, because even if you are not a person who's involved in animal welfare and animal rights, the fact is it affects all of us as we move on and more of these viruses are hatched. We're not going to be able to fight them.
Yeah, one really interesting point is that pigs in factory farms excrete 75% of the antibiotics that they consume. Those antibiotics that are excreted go into the surrounding water supply, they go into the groundwater, and studies have shown that people that live within a small radius of these factory farms have a much higher rate of staph infections, of MRSA infections, and similar diseases, because they are ingesting these excreted antibiotics and drugs that then prevent them, their bodies, from being able to fight off some of these really serious infectious agents. And so, you know, and another point that I want to make here is that one out of every four pigs in the United States is owned by a Chinese corporation. A huge and growing portion of the pigs that are being raised on factory farms here in the United States are being raised for Chinese consumers. You see, the Chinese have figured out that they can externalize all of their costs by offshoring their factory farming operations to the United States. They can offload the pollution. They can offload the disease.
And that's a big issue too. Is what it does to our environments. This factory farming is unbelievably harsh on our environment as well.
Yeah, it's terrible on our environment, our wildlife, our watersheds, our riparian areas, and what they get in return is a steady supply of cheap pork. And so it is a terrible problem. Like I said, it's two sides of the same coin. And, you know, I think we've got a great opportunity here to really reinvent our food supply, our supply chains. What we are learning in this pandemic is that industrial animal agriculture, it cannot be fixed. It can't be tweaked to accommodate future pandemics. What we need is a wholesale rejection of industrial animal agriculture and a return to humane, responsible, grass-fed, pasture-based animal agriculture where the animals are healthy and happy and living the lives that they were designed for, rather than being raised in the miserable conditions of industrial farms.
Well, and that also brings to mind the fact that under the present administration here in the United States, they have relaxed a lot of the regulations and rules and oversight in the factory farming industry to where they are policing themselves, and they're now slaughtering more animals faster than ever before, leading to more injury and cruelty. Yep. Is that correct?
It is absolutely correct. And one thing that folks need to know is that the global meat companies act very much like drug cartels. JBS, which is the largest meat company in the world, is owned by Brazilian family who are constantly under investigation for corruption. Smithfield owns most of the huge industrial factory farms that raise pigs in North Carolina. Tyson, which is an American-based corporation. These are giant multinational corporations that are pushing this industrial model. And, you know, quite frankly, we can no longer afford cheap meat from these global meat cartels. And like I said, we really have an opportunity here to do something better. It's a great opportunity for people who've been thinking about ditching meat to do it. There are so many wonderful plant-based alternatives now. And if folks want to continue eating meat, this is a great opportunity to get to know your local producers. Go to the farmers markets when they open up, you know, and do some online research to find out who is raising those products in your area, and then reach out to those farmers on your own and get to know them and get to know how your food is being produced.
As you mentioned a little bit earlier, there is a call for the wet markets in China to be, you know, closed down. They are back open at this point, but in China, they have now banned the sale and eating of wildlife there. But we noticed that a lot of these viruses that eventually become pandemic seem to originate there. Can you speak to, is a certain conditions that are happening in those markets that make it more likely that diseases will jump from animals to humans?
Yes, and in fact, it's not just the wet markets, but these, so many of these pandemics have started with wildlife even outside the wet markets. For example, it's believed that the AIDS virus was caused by eating an infected primate in Western Africa. The mm-hmm. Ebola virus started in wildlife, you know, basically the bushmeat trade in Africa, where people slaughter wildlife and then sell the meat products in these open markets in Africa, you know, or the SARS pandemic that started in China. I mean, there's just so many. What we're finding is that these viruses originate in wildlife, but then very quickly and very easily, because they are zoonotic in nature, that means that they can live and thrive in multiple vectors. These viruses make the jump very easily to people, and in an unsanitary and unhygienic atmosphere like these wet markets and the wildlife markets, those viruses, of course, are going to just thrive. And it doesn't take much for those viruses to mutate into a strain that can affect humans. And then, of course, the humans, you know, spread it amongst ourselves. So, it is time to shut down those markets. And I'm hopeful that governments everywhere will bring pressure to bear on the Chinese government and the governments of other countries where they flourish to shut them down, you know, finally get rid of them.
You're listening to Voices for the Animals on 90.7 FM KBOO Portland, your community radio station. This monthly program gives a voice to the voiceless, and we appreciate you listening and remind you that the only way KBOO can exist is with your support. If this program or others you hear on this station have value to you, please become a member today by going to kboo.fm/donate. I'm Michelle Coppola. I'm your host for this month, and our guest today is Scott Beckstead, Oregon's Rural Outreach Director for the Humane Society of the United States. And he and I just finished talking about the animal origins of the coronavirus that has changed all of our lives recently. And one of the other things that's happened is a great number of people are using this downtime to binge watch TV. And there's been a sad pop culture phenomenon that has happened via Netflix called The Tiger King. This show, if you don't know, follows the bizarre life of a big cat hoarder and abuser named Joe Exotic, who is now thankfully in prison, but had a wild animal farm, park, or zoo in Oklahoma. By the way, Scott, have you seen it yet? Have you seen the Joe Exotic thing?
You know, I watched a little bit of it, but I was so disgusted that I couldn't watch it. You know, the producers of that movie really had an opportunity to educate the public about the plight of captive wildlife and captive big cats in particular. And instead, they took this approach where they really embellished the innuendo, the salacious nature of the relationships involved. And what a shame. You know, and shame on those producers for just basically leaving the tigers out of Tiger King. There was no attention given to the abuse that those animals suffer at the hands of people like Joe Exotic. In 2011, HSUS had an undercover investigator document Joe Exotic beating his tigers. And we know, you know, they breed those tigers, they subject the cubs that are torn from their mothers immediately after birth to stress and abuse. And then after a few months, when the cubs are too large for encounters with the public, people like Joe Exotic no longer have an opportunity to make money off them. Those cubs are caged, or they're sold into the pet trade, or they die, or, you know, a guy like Joe Exotic is known to just kill them, to just shoot them dead. And that was completely missed by these producers. And so I think that hopefully, you know, people will understand that the real story behind Tiger King is the tigers themselves, and the fact that there are more tigers in captivity in the United States than there are tigers wild in the world.
That is stunning. There are more tigers in captivity in our country than there are in the wild?
In fact, I believe that there are more tigers in captivity just in the state of Texas than live wild in the world. Yes, we have, you know, basically allowed this unregulated industry of private ownership of wild animals to flourish. Now, thankfully, a number of states, including Oregon, have passed laws banning the unlicensed private possession of these dangerous wild animals. But in states like Texas, or Oklahoma, obviously, you know, those industries aren't just allowed to exist. They're allowed to thrive and prosper. And that needs to come to an end. And so the Humane Society of the United States, as well as a number of other good groups, have pushed the Big Cat Public Safety Act, which the bill number on that is H.R. 1380.
And this is a federal, is this a federal act? A federal?
Yes, this is a federal bill. This is a federal bill, the Big Cat Public Safety Act. Again, the bill numbers are H.R. 1380 and S. 2561. This bill will prohibit cub petting activities, of course, will help to prevent abuse and the huge population of captive big cats that the activities create. And then it also prohibits individuals from keeping big cats as pets, which is important to protect the welfare of these animals as well as to ensure the safety of the public. It shouldn't take undercover footage or, you know, a series on Netflix to protect big cats and to protect the public. But there is this bill. And so I would really encourage your listeners to call their members of Congress, call your United States representative and both of your United States senators, and encourage them to sign on as a sponsor and then support this the Big Cat Public Safety Act, something that's long overdue.
I want to back up a little bit and talk about the exotic wildlife trade and how close it is actually to every one of us. You know, people who watch this show may think, oh, this happens in places like Florida where there's a lot of tourism and it happens in the South and that sort of thing. But actually, this happens all over the United States. Anytime you go to a fair or a festival and they have petting activities where you can have your picture taken with a bear cub or a baby tiger or something like that, you're participating in this exotic wildlife trade, and there's no way that animal got there without somebody being abused. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. And you know, if you see these, you know, these little baby animals that are being, you know, where you can have your picture taken with one for a price, you know, just ask yourself where that baby animal is going to be in just a few months when it's too big to safely handle, because there's a chance it could end up being sold to someone else who's unqualified to care for that animal. Maybe it's going to go to a captive hunt facility where basically, you know, a rich trophy hunter pays a lot of money to walk into a cage and shoot the animal, you know, that has no chance to escape. I mean, there's all sorts of really horrible outcomes for these animals. And so rather than celebrating, you know, these horrible people like Joe Exotic and you know, giving them this cult hero status, that's despicable in my view. Mm-hmm. We need to be calling out people that are profiting off of captive wildlife, and we need to pass laws like this one to make sure that it doesn't happen anymore.
You know, you mentioned this piece of legislation that is currently being proposed federally on the federal level, but don't we have some animal welfare laws through the USDA or on a federal level and even at the local level that prevent cruelty of this kind of animals? What's going on there?
The United States Department of Agriculture is supposed to enforce the Animal Welfare Act, which provides very bare minimum standards for captive wildlife like this. Unfortunately, and this is especially true in the current administration, the USDA just does a terrible job. And right now, under the current administration, the USDA is really looking out for the violators more than they are cracking down on them. Of course, one of the first things that the Trump administration did when it took office was basically remove all of the records of the inspections and the violations that the USDA had accumulated on people like Joe Exotic over the years, so that information was no longer available to the public. And it took a lawsuit by HSUS to get that data put back on. But more broadly, of course, the USDA has sort of pivoted and now actually is working to protect them from enforcement, to basically, when they get a complaint, to go to those people and work with them to make sure that, number one, their identity is hidden from public view, but also to make sure that they don't suffer any consequences. So it's a terrible mix. I'm really glad to see that, you know, we've got good people in Congress that are trying to reverse that, but it's a terrible situation for the animals. It's a terrible situation for the public. And yeah, right now, unfortunately, the federal agencies that are charged with protecting these animals are instead protecting the people doing the abuse.
Enforcement is a really big problem with regard to, even if there's laws on the books, getting them enforced is really always the key issue.
That's true. And of course, you know, working, you know, in Oregon as the state director, we've passed all sorts of really great laws, everything from a ban on puppy mills to the cruelty of horse tripping to shark finning. I mean, we've done so many good things, but of course those laws are only as effective as, you know, the efforts by law enforcement to enforce them. And that is, you know, that's the follow through that unfortunately has to be done. You can't just pass a law and then sit back and let it take, you know, hope that it does the trick. You have to, you know, make sure that law enforcement is taking these laws seriously and is aggressively and uniformly enforcing those laws.
So are there reputable wildlife and big cat rescues that people can support and get involved with?
Yes, absolutely. And what folks should look for is accreditation by the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries, or GFAS. GFAS inspects and verifies and accredits animal sanctuaries and animal rescues all over the world. They are the gold standard for sanctuaries and rescues. And so before patronizing or going to see any organization that holds itself out as a rescue or a sanctuary, check to make sure that it's been verified, inspected, and accredited by the Global Federation of Animal Sanctuaries. In fact, I'll be honest with you, the very best rescues and sanctuaries aren't open to the public.
Right.
Because they're not there for the public. They're there for the animals. And so, you know, often, you know, rescues and sanctuaries might have an open house and so forth where, you know, the public has an opportunity to see. But that's a really good way of making sure that the organization has the best interests of the animals in mind.
One of those would be Wildcat Ridge. I think they're down by you, like in Douglas County. Is that correct? Yeah.
Cheryl Toller. No, she's not down this far.
Okay.
I believe she's now in, I want to say, Linn County.
In Linn County. Okay.
But of course, and I know Cheryl very well. I've met her animals and seen her facilities, and, you know, top notch. She really does everything right.
Before we go, Scott, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the work that the Humane Society of the United States is doing on behalf of animals. A lot of times there's a mix-up between your local Humane Society and the Humane Society of the United States and the activities of each organization, because they're different.
Well, the Humane Society of the United States was founded in 1954 by a group of visionaries who understood that we need to tackle animal cruelty at the front end. We see the local animal shelters and humane societies and rescues saving animals at the back end of the problem, taking all of the animals that are the sort of the consequence of the cruelty. And what HSUS's focus is the laws and the other social institutions that foster animal abuse and cruelty toward animals. And so fundamentally what that means is that we are trying to transform the law, you know, how corporations do business. We spend a lot of time in court litigating for animals. We're trying to drive the transformational change to a more humane society using those methods. Having said that, we do a lot of support work that benefits local shelters and sanctuaries and rescues. And we, you know, of course, we have our direct care centers, including Dutchess Sanctuary, the horse sanctuary that I helped set up here in Douglas County, where we provide world-class care to a large number of animals. So, you know, I because of my legal and political background, I love this work. I love thinking that I'm actually helping to change the laws and make the world a better place for animals. And that's what I believe HSUS is committed to doing.
And if people want to get involved with the work you're doing and support it, where do they need to go for more information?
Best place is our website, which is www.humanesociety.org.
Great. Thank you, Scott. You've been listening to Voices for the Animals on 90.7 KBOO FM, where we defend the defenseless and give voice to those who have no choice in our world. You can find us on the Voices for the Animals Facebook page, also at the Voices for the Animals page on KBOO.FM. And we also keep a running list of upcoming animal welfare events and activism. If you enjoyed this show, want to pass it along to others, a podcast was available on the KBOO website at the Voices for the Animals page. We'll see you next time, and until then, be kind to animals, non-human and otherwise, and stay healthy.